For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Pick Six Podcast, where, as Evan just said before we started recording, we are allowed to talk about the Nebraska-Wisconsin volleyball match this weekend. Hello, everybody. Sam McEwen along with Evie Bland and Tom Chattel for what is an interesting kind of double bill on Saturday. You have Nebraska-Northwestern football, and we'll talk a little bit about Matt Rhule's interesting comments earlier this week and what Nebraska has to do to potentially make a bowl. But the main event is the volleyball match. This may be one of the few times in history where Nebraska football and Nebraska volleyball play on the same day, and I am wagering that more people will watch the volleyball match on TV than they watch the football game. That's my hunch. This will be the most watched volleyball match in history on BTN. 2 million viewers, and the Nebraska football game will get about 1 million on the same channel. So it'll be a BTN double feature, Husker football, then Husker volleyball. We want to remind everybody to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. This is a great time, let me tell you, with everything that's going on. You get 6 months for a buck. Today is October 18th. That's going to take you all the way through the Final Four and midway through the Nebraska baseball and the Nebraska softball season. So if you want to follow what Jordy Ball is going to be doing for the Huskers, subscribe now at www.omaha.com/subscribe. Okay, let's get into it. Volleyball. Here we go. Man, this sport is great. And man, Nebraska and Wisconsin is going to be a fun one. A lot of stakes. Number one, number two, both have to play tonight in order to guarantee that they're going to be undefeated. I think they're both going to be undefeated by the end of tonight. Tom, you're going to be there. You're going to talk to Cook tomorrow. But I mean, this is just, there's a lot of storylines here, not just the teams, but the coach and the players and just the stage. It's a great stage for women's sports.
Well, I know why it's big, but why is it different? Everybody's treating you like this is different. Nebraska's been number one before. They played number one teams before.
Yeah.
They play Wisconsin every year. Wisconsin's been ahead of them for the last 2 or 3 years.
You add it all up, and I think that's why.
They play big matches every year.
Yep.
Why is it? Is it because of the stadium match? Did that change how we view this Nebraska team? Is it because, again, look at the team last year. That was supposed to be one of the all-time teams. The team 2 years ago had all that talent, right? Yep. Now, this one has talent. But what is it about this? Maybe it's everything added up. It feels like a game of the century. And I think it feels like volleyball has become more important everywhere, too. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's not. I mean, it's certainly big, but to me, it's like the next biggest one. It's not like is it the biggest one ever? No, I don't know about that. It's just, you know what I mean? It just seems like it's the next level up, maybe. But it's just, to me, it's just another big game for Nebraska volleyball. They've had these every year.
I was looking at an Associated Press graphic yesterday. I don't know why I was looking at this, but in 2005, there were like 160,000 girls playing high school volleyball. Most last year, and this speaks to it, there were 311,000. That doubled. So the number of participants in high school volleyball has doubled in the last however many years. And I think that everything that you just said, the records, the ranking, the stadium game, the fact that Nebraska's lost 10 straight to Wisconsin, and this thing about how there's something going on with this sport makes this one. It's almost like there's a new spotlight on the sport. And so now, I don't know what the first big college football game was when that happened. When would you say college football took off? In the 60s? Right? Like,
I will say 70s.
Okay.
There were more games on TV in the 70s.
So, like, Nebraska-Oklahoma in 71 wasn't the first 1 versus 2. I mean, Michigan State played Notre Dame. Army played Notre Dame. But everybody, when they think about the game of the century, they don't talk about Michigan State and Notre Dame. And I just feel like this match just feel – now, maybe it's because we're in Nebraska. Just feels like, wow, this is huge.
It's the game of the century.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The new century. Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's – I mean, Nebraska is so rarely in this spot, too, where they just haven't gotten over the hump against an opponent. I think that's the most interesting part is, like, Nebraska's reset. There's been all this talk about the youth, all this talk about the freshmen. This is the chance to see – if that's enough to slay big bad Wisconsin, which has had their number. And like, they're going to play in Madison later in the year. They very well may play in the Final Four in December.
I bet
like,
on it.
This is that kind of tone setter for that, I think. And I think the stadium match has a lot to do with it too, because, you know, we're still reflecting on Volleyball Day in Nebraska and the history of volleyball in, you know, since the 70s when, you know, again, volleyball players at Nebraska would put out a sign at the Coliseum and beg people coming from football games to show their stubs and come watch free volleyball. Mm. And it was hard, and they still drew like a few hundred people. And now you're talking about playing in front of another sellout at Devaney, national television.
$255 to stand.
Right, exactly. It's just, I think it's just another reminder of how far it's come. Is it as significant as Volleyball Day in America? No. But I thought Cook said it pretty well. This is business as usual for us. This is what they're used to being, but it's a new group against the team that's held it back within a sport that's continuing to explode in popularity. It's really cool. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so, too.
I really think Volleyball Day changed everything. And I think that's why this is big.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've, you know, they... they chased Penn State for a while, and they, mm-hmm. you know, and they, one of the all-time great matches was here in Omaha. They lost to Penn State, and I believe it was a five-setter, one of the all-time semifinal matches. And
'08.
That seemed like a long time ago.
'08.
A long time ago, yeah. And you know, the sport's different now. It's
and it's, I don't. I guess I don't want to. I think the sport's better. Like, those teams were great, and Jordan Larson obviously was on that team, and that's maybe the best volleyball player in Nebraska history. But I think Cook would say that the overall quality of play is higher across the sport now than it was 15 years ago.
Here's the question. As much as Volleyball Day did for the sport, can Saturday night do even more?
Good.
Is the pressure on these two to come up with an epic game? No sweeps,
right.
A five setter with all kind of haymakers, a heavyweight bout that raises the sport even more. Mm-hmm. Well, when all eyes are watching, that's when the heat's on.
Right,
you got to deliver. You know, you can't have a clunker, or some of them aren't going to come back. Everybody's watching, and that's what 71 Game of the Century did. All eyes were on it. And it delivered like never before.
Right. The part of me that wonders, because obviously BTN makes a crap load of money off these games, and they don't give many of them up. The two that they gave up to national TV, to Fox, and I think CBS, were Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan, Ohio State. Now, the Michigan, Ohio State match is not going to be very competitive, and it's not between two good teams. I think that's on Fox. The other ones, these are on Sunday. Well, BTN kept Nebraska, Wisconsin. That's the match of the year. Right, and so they weren't going to give that inventory up. But I do wonder what this match would have been like if it came after an NFL game on a Sunday. Like, that would have been, to me, like the pinnacle of it. But it's in a great spot. It's on a Saturday night. It's opposite Duke, Florida State. Yeah, you know? And it's opposite Utah, USC, which isn't the same game as it was the week before because of the way USC got slammed. Notre Dame. So, you know, there's a chance this thing busts
through.
What's the
Big Ten Saturday night game?
Michigan State. That's going to blow out.
That's a regional.
It's another 45.
It's regional, and Michigan's a Borg. I mean, they're like, they're going to just steamroll Michigan State. People will tune out. Hopefully, the BTN has primed the pump so that the thing's going to be a big deal on Saturday night.
I really think they present
it that way.
Watch the ratings for the Sunday championship game this year in Tampa. We're already seeing volleyball Sunday night. You might see more volleyball going forward. It might become a Sunday sport.
I can believe it.
You don't want to go head-to-head with the NFL, but I can certainly see Sunday night being, because there already are matches on Sundays. And then when we come home from church, I turn on ESPN at noon, and there's Florida versus Missouri or somebody, somebody from the Big Ten is playing. So, and it kind of gets lost because Sunday at noon you want to go right to the NFL.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whoever's playing. There's a lot of bad NFL games.
There is.
But you watch them anyway because it's the NFL. I'm wondering if moving, and the NCAA moving the championship from Saturday night to Sunday is going to change. Because you feel like this is a fluid situation. Like it's volleyball is growing before our eyes. Okay, where does it belong? Saturday or Saturday night? Maybe Sunday night. I can see Sunday night. I mean, Sunday night, people want to sit around and watch TV. And
not everybody wants to watch the NBC game. Right. Like last Sunday,
what's on?
Yeah. That would have been a hell of a night to have a big volleyball match. The Giants and the Bills, the game was close, but it wasn't a good football game, and there would have been a great opportunity to put 3 million people on a volleyball match.
Or maybe it's 5 o'clock.
What you're saying.
I'm not smart enough to know that,
yeah.
But I'm just wondering if this year's NCAA championship being on Sunday on ABC is something that is going to change it.
Isn't it interesting, too? We're seeing it in women's basketball, too. It reminds me a lot of what Caitlin Clark did for women's basketball in the spring when, to your point, Tom, all the eyes were on her in the Final Four and in the championship, and she put on a show both times. And you've seen how the growth has come out of that.
Yes.
I wonder, is that a coincidence, you think, that volleyball and women's basketball are kind of ascending at the same time? Or is there something greater going on there?
So I will say this. I think there's probably something related to women's sports ascending, one. Two, fathers of daughters are way more into this than they were 30 years ago. Three, and I think this is not a small thing, every single contract with the exception of men's basketball is coming up with the NCAA, and they are going to renegotiate these contracts. And ESPN, with the exception of women's basketball, has buried all of its NCAA championships.
Yeah.
Buried them. They have treated volleyball like poorly. They've done well with the College World Series, and they've done better with softball, but they've treated women's college volleyball poorly. And so part of what's happening, the reason they're putting it on Sunday, is in part because to respond to, okay, we'll do what you want us to do, NCAA, because I think there's going to be other bidders that are going to be like, we'll do exactly what you ask us to do. If you want us to put it on CBS or Fox, we'll do it, and that's fine. Because they're going to try to make money, and ESPN has buried volleyball for a really long time, and now I think you're going to see ESPN make an effort. I don't know if it's too late, but I think they're going to make an effort, much like they did with women's college basketball. Remember, the Final Four for college basketball was not on ABC until last year because they're like, oh, now we can't just protect our cable ad rates on ESPN. We're going to put this on national TV, and they got 10 million people. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just it was Caitlin Clark for sure, but it was putting the game on ABC.
Sure.
And so I think ESPN's being pushed now, and the NCAA is being like, we're not going to just put up with this anymore, and I think that helps it.
Yeah.
But simultaneously, women's college sports, I think, is getting bigger and bigger because of male viewers acknowledging how high quality the competition is. Fathers of daughters.
And it feels also like softball is really coming.
Absolutely.
And, the softball crowd at the
oh, yeah.
State championship the other night. It's
it's more enjoyable to watch than baseball.
I think it's got. We love our college baseball, but college softball's got a chance to surpass it in some ways in terms of the viewership and the TV embracing it. I don't hate to say it because I love softball. I really enjoy watching softball, but it's. I think college baseball has got it. They kind of change their season, but they needed to change something up. And the games have been a little faster, but softball's fun to watch. And maybe it had nothing to do with baseball. But I think all the what Cook said yesterday is correct. All the women's sports are on a roll, and it's great to see. And but really, volleyball doesn't have a cable guard, but it's. It's got power. It's
right.
got grace and speed. It's fast.
It is.
They made a tremendous move by making every point or every
no side outs.
No side outs.
Yeah. Rally scoring. Yeah.
Rally scoring. Yeah. Thanks. So anyway. Yeah. I mean, Saturday night's gonna be fun. And when the starting quarterback says, "Hey, I'm going to the game," you got to go to the game.
He's going to the match. Briefly on Wisconsin. So they're undefeated. So far in Big Ten play, they haven't lost a set. They came very close to losing a couple of times in non-conference play. They played a much harder non-conference schedule than Nebraska. They did. Let's be honest. They survived it. They have five players who have more than 100 kills. They have a very experienced team with really talented players. I mean, there's just no other way to... There's no other way to say that. Sarah Franklin was a Michigan State transfer. She's their leading attacker. She's really good. She will be tough to stop. They have, from people who might remember the match from a couple of years ago, Anna Smrek, I think is how you say her name. She has turned a corner as a player, and she's really good. She's the 6'8", sort of really, yep. really tall player. Well, she's hitting 429. And is just kind of a special player. I mean, she's the best middle blocker in the country, and she's dominant. Andy Jackson's going to have her hands full trying to hit over Anna Smrek. So is Merritt Beeson, and so is Harper Murray. So Smrek's become really, really dominant. Franklin's good defensively. They're not as good as Nebraska. Nobody's as good as Nebraska. Nebraska's number one in the country in opponent hitting percentage, but Wisconsin is good enough that Nebraska can't just steamroll them. So I don't think Wisconsin will, this is just my opinion, I'm not a coach or a volleyball player, I don't think Wisconsin will run away with the match. I think if anybody wins it in four sets, it'll be Nebraska. But I think Wisconsin wins wars of attrition. They're really good at just grinding and grinding. They're deep and they're tough. So I think if Nebraska is able to get out to a fast start, they might win this thing in four. If it goes to five, I think it's just, it could come down to the last 3 points. Like, it's just going to be a battle. A three-hour movie.
Nebraska's youth will be interesting to watch. Do they not know what they don't know, and they're not mm-hmm. they're not scared? They're loose, or the crowd will be different, and that might make it different for the. Oh, there's a lot of pressure on us now. We're right. playing with somebody really good. It's a growth moment for the Nebraska team, and we'll see which way it goes.
And they've been steeled, too. I mean, they've played at Stanford and won, obviously, volleyball day. Nobody's played in front of a crowd like that ever. So if they're going to win, like, it feels like the table is set for that on Saturday.
Totally agree with you. I think Nebraska might even be a slight favorite. There's no betting line on these things. I don't even know what a volleyball betting line would look like, but I think Nebraska is a slight favorite, perhaps. But again, if you get into a battle with this team, Wisconsin will take you all the way to the end. They're just tough to beat because they're strong and they're big, and they don't give up. And I thought a couple years ago in the national title match, Nebraska kind of had the edge going into that final set, and Wisconsin just started fast, and then they just drug it out, and they pulled it out. And so...
They'll have incentive coming here. You know they've been thinking about Nebraska after the volleyball day.
Taking their record.
That's a good record. Point.
And I think Sheffield is going to play that up, the Wisconsin coach. And they're going to want to come here and okay, we're going to prove a point to you guys. We're still on top.
That's a great point.
And so...
Yeah, Wisconsin's going to play the underdog card, aren't they? They've won 10 in a row in this match, but they're going to come in with the chip.
Absolutely.
That's a great point.
But they should be the favorite because until you beat them, you haven't beaten them. Mm-hmm. So you can't be favored until you beat them. That's how I see Nebraska with this bowl game thing. People are, where are we going? No, we're not going anywhere because we got to beat Northwestern first. Yeah. I mean, I'm just changing the football here. Sorry.
No, that's good.
That's a good Nebraska segue. hasn't. So they beat these teams. Until you get to six, you haven't gotten to six. So, you know, I could lose. They win every game. I could lose every game. So, but I like the vibe around Nebraska football right now. It's quiet confidence. The confidence is growing. You can see it. the last game did a lot for it. You know, you guys were there. You saw it and felt it. But it's a quiet. You know, I don't think Rule's going to let these guys get big heads. We saw that the other day.
Yeah. So the first question in the press conference, which I thought was a fine question about, basically about all your goals are still in front of you. What's the incentive? I can't remember who asked it. But
Sean Callahan.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, it was, that's exactly, yeah. I mean, that's something you tell your team. Listen, nothing's off the table. Let's pretend like we can still run for anything we want. And Rule really, I mean, he really snapped at it and was like, no, I mean, that's part of the problem is that we look too much at the big picture. And he's like, I just want to go. And he wore, I did not notice this, and this was right at the beginning of your story. And I liked your story on Monday. That was good.
Thanks.
But you noticed that he was wearing a sweatshirt that said 00.
Oh, it's all premeditated with him. Yes. I think, regardless of who asked what, he was going to get that message out within the first 10 minutes. That's just how
he happened to fit perfectly with the question.
But, like, it happens every week.
For him.
He did?
It happens every week. Is he has something that he wants to say, and he's going to get it out there, even if it's only partially related to what he's saying. And I think that was what that was. You know, he watched the Big Ten West last weekend. He saw the flaws and the imperfections and the warts on every team left on their schedule, but he didn't want any part of it. And so, yeah, when you're asked about what's left, boom, let's talk about that.
He's here to talk to his team, and I'm Absolutely. Here for it every week. I love it, as opposed to the mundane, humdrum press conferences we've sat through the last 10 years of, you know, here's Bo Pelini. You know, you got a problem with that, you know. You know, yeah. Mr. Rogers, Mike Riley. Well, yeah, that sounds like it's a good point. And you know, Frost. The guy talks football. He's a football guy,
right,
who wants to talk football, and he wants to give a message to his team. I'm all for it because I want to hear what it is. It's a window into what he's saying to his team and what. The process. We're getting to see the process. I don't care about the bowl game. If it's Vegas, I'm happy to go to Vegas. But the bowl game's great. This is a building year. I want to dig into it. We don't get to do this very often because the other guys weren't building. They were just trying to win. And they weren't trying to build anything. We got to win because I'm at Nebraska. So we got to win right now. And,
right.
And this is more of a bigger picture thing. It's what he says, oh, I'm a big picture guy. Different than when, after the 2014 Wisconsin game, you know, Melvin Gordon just scored again, and snow's coming down Camp Randall. They blow the lead. It's a blowout loss. And somebody asked Bo about the big picture because he lost another big game. Yeah. Well, I'm not a big picture guy, which was like an indictment. You know, the Nebraska coach should be a CEO. So
in seventh year, you can ask that question. It's a good one to
exactly.
ask.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
And you guys were there. You heard it. When Rule says it, well, he's the CEO. So when he says, I'm not in the big picture, he's just saying, that's not what we're thinking about right now.
Right.
But he's in the big pictures. What his message to the team is part of the big picture. So I love it. I love it all. I'm here for it. I just think it's great.
Why do you think that's something that Nebraska's struggled with, the big picture stuff? Like, why is that unique, or is that unique to Nebraska? Yeah.
It's unique because, and I hate to say there's nothing else going on here. There's always a lot of things going on here. And in this day and age, people, whatever is going on here is on your phone. So people are here just like they are in New York City. They're on their phone. So Nebraska football is a fishbowl, and that's what I love. We talked about this on my video yesterday. You know, Matt Rule is here to change Nebraska football and how they play football, the way they play, everything about the program, the culture, so on and so forth, the winning. But one thing he can't change is Nebraska is a huge fishbowl. Mm-hmm. People care about everything, and they're going to talk. Right now we're talking about going to a bowl, but we haven't been. Well, if you're going to a bowl every year, we're talking about which bowl you're going to, or why aren't you ranked, or why aren't you winning national championships, or They drove Osborne crazy until he almost left, and then he didn't because he realized the fishbowl is powerful. It helps you recruit. It helps you win. You just got to manage it, manage the fishbowl. And so that's what I'm anxious to see. Rule is going to have to adjust to Nebraska. And that is, how is he going to manage the fishbowl? And he didn't have that at Temple or Baylor. Didn't have that, you know, Carolina. I would submit the Nebraska fishbowl is more powerful than any and the Carolina Panther deal. So,
and they stink.
So I'm right, but even when they stink here, the fishbowl.
Oh yeah,
people say apathy. Oh, there'll be apathy. Never be there. Will never be apathy in anybody's lifetime here.
The Panther struggles too much. Rule right. I mean,
right.
That franchise is in
trouble.
I'd
say there's no apathy here because people will always care.
Right.
And when you're not winning, you're getting fired because they care. Right. So. As has happened too often here, but so I think it's great. But he's having to adjust. The difference is the Nebraska Fishbowl. There is a difference. It is different than other places. When I go to Missouri to watch a game, it wasn't like that there. They just had their third sellout in a row. Oh my God! Stop the presses! You know, three sellouts. It's different here, and that's what makes it great. And so I think he has to adjust to that, and watching him adjust to that is fun right now.
I would give there's a little bit of micro in there. Like, I think they did go 1-5 in the back half of last year, but I think, you know, some of that was related to not having a head coach, you know, not knowing exactly who was healthy, whatever. I think the macro thing is partially the fishbowl, and then when Nebraska moved to the Big Ten – it lost all of its psychological edge over any of the teams it was playing. And none of the teams in the Big Ten care what Nebraska used to do. And so when you go into these games, a lot of times what you'll see is there's just Nebraska does not have the psychological advantage the way it might have had over a team like Kansas or Kansas State that had lost 20 in a row. Big Ten just doesn't have that fear. And so when Nebraska joined the Big Ten, people might recall, they beat Michigan State that first year. They beat Penn State. They beat Ohio State. They had better football players than they do now. But over time, you just saw that those teams just weren't as afraid. And so I think part of it is that Nebraska doesn't walk into these stadiums as anything but, here's an opportunity to take Nebraska down a peg, and I don't think the players fear them. And so I think that's part of it. And then I think there's... we've talked about this over time. There's a kind of aspect of Nebraska athletics where even if you're not good, you're still great. And I think they've had to work through that. I think Trev's dealt with it. I think Rule's starting to deal with it. Rule, I think, probably comes at it from a different perspective than Trev. Rule comes at it, I think, in my opinion, with more empathy. Whereas Trev, and I'm not saying Trev isn't empathetic, but that Trev's like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, I don't know why these, you know, like, I think there's more of a, we need to get it going kind of thing. Like, there's an edge that Trev wants to see. Whereas Rule's like, well, these players are this and this. And he's taking more of the you know, the empathetic approach. But the reality is Nebraska has better athletes than the records it has. But I think sometimes losing around here is just kind of, it's not that big of a deal because next year everybody's going to return. You know, everybody's going to come back and everybody's going to be just as excited. People are going to make a big deal out of, you know, a 45 yards rushing. There was a question on Monday, I think it was, about a guy that, I don't know, I can't even remember what the question was. But it was like somebody had two catches. And it's like, you know, really? I mean, that's how starved they are for success, because it's like, well, this guy had a grab. Or, I mean, I'm not saying that a freshman receiver starting isn't a big deal. But when, let me know when that freshman has, you know, five grabs for 60 yards instead of 1 for 5. So, like, you know, so there's things there that I think he's trying to battle through. And
it's all this stuff is magnified now,
yes,
too.
Yeah, right.
And the Nebraska fans have always overanalyzed everything, every little move. I mean, no offensive line in the country has been overanalyzed more than Nebraska's over the years.
Sure.
But they did it from the coffee shops, small town coffee shops. Now you can do it on your phone. It's more magnified. It's out there. It's visible. It's all encompassing. It's just kind of closes in on you all the time. So he's got a bigger challenge. That's why I think what you're saying is true. It's there's more to deal with now, and so
for sure.
Well, and Sam, you asked him the rule the other day, the question about the black shirts, and he essentially was like, "Yeah, you know, we quietly added a guy or two, or Tony White, and like, I think that's healthy. They didn't. There was no big social media splash about here's another black shirt, and this week and that. Like, that's not. That's all just extra stuff. And I feel like they've done a better job of sort of putting in perspective what matters and what doesn't as it relates to trying to win.
The more that they can normalize this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, this is what we always do, right? But here's what's not normal. And I don't know. I think it's coming out of different outlets. But these rule speeches are everywhere now.
They are.
And what's behind that? Is that
you just have Twitter accounts taking snippets of video that is on the Huskers account, and they're taking this little small part and they're pushing it out weeks later. So the If We Die, We Die one was from the Northern Illinois game.
They put them out if they win.
If they win, they
Nebraska
put these out.
And Nebraska puts them out.
Nebraska does.
So rule.
But that little chunk was like weeks old, but it came out on Monday, and Will Compton saw it, or whatever day it was, last Friday.
Week. Yep.
That's what's happening.
It's
interesting.
I don't want to accuse Rule of doing it to you know, stage a drama or a quote, but does he know that's being? It's gonna be when he's in the middle of a speech. Does he know? I mean, before he gives the speech, does he know this is going out there? So I better say this, or I better be like this.
Usually,
I don't know.
On Monday. I think he knows that it might go out, but just like after the Michigan game, I don't think he always knows what he's gonna say. Because what he said by the end of the Michigan press conference was not what he had planned on going in there with.
I don't think he goes in. It's not a.
I think he gets emotional.
Scripted speech. I think it just comes out of his. Oh, yeah. I agree with that. But these guys have to know. I mean, what a different world we live in. I mean, the coaches used to. That was the sanctuary. You couldn't. Nobody could get in the locker room. Nobody could ever tape it. Nobody could ever hear it.
Right.
And nobody. There used to be the sign. What you see here, what you hear here, let it stay here when you leave here. That was the sign in every NFL locker room, everybody, Major League Baseball. It was sacred. Now, all of a sudden, they want it out. And I wonder why.
Recruiting.
But it can't be anything bad because they're not going to rip another school.
Right.
They put it out when they win.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
There's going to be a whole bunch of footage from the Colorado game and whatever else.
And I don't want to just make it just about recruiting. I think Nebraska's team does a nice job. It's different than what they did under Frost. And there were some things that I liked with Frost's media team. And then there's things I really like with this one. But I think some of it is they just want to consistently send the message to the players that they're recruiting. Here's what you're going to experience.
Yeah.
And do you hear how these guys are responding? So, like, within those videos, you hear those players responding. They're not just, but you hear the emotion. I'll never forget, maybe you remember this, right after Bo's first game, they put out a video on Twitter. And you remember what, like, he goes, I want you to hit him. And, like, he put his fist up to the ear hole. And he goes, right here! And it was powerful. Like, people were like, oh, my God. You know, who is this guy? And then after they beat Ohio State in 2011, remember the speech he gave in there? And he goes, how about? And then he put the football up and him, Stanley. And people are just like, ah, you know. And so, like, if you know how to use it, and Mike Riley didn't know how to use it. Rule's the best since Bo at being able to use that. He's not, you put it perfectly. He's not, what do you care, or whatever Bull was trying to go after. But Rule uses the same emotional palette. He's just not a jerk about it, you know?
I think
that they're both emotional.
But I think Rule's learned from being a head coach, whereas Bo hadn't been a head coach. Honestly, I don't want to say smarter. He's more savvy with this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. He is.
And so it's all part of the package where I think Bo didn't know what he was going to say at any given time. No. And that was just part of the deal.
He didn't know what he was going to do.
Well, which is when he came out and yelled at Dirk and me for whatever. That was never that got released because somebody didn't like him. But I
would agree that Rule's not like that. Like, I don't think he walks out of there and thinks, you know, I'm going to get this reporter or that reporter. I don't think that's his.
No. But I think it's a fine line between.
It is.
Do you know what you're going to say? And is it all part of it? Is it all part of like a marketing package?
Sure.
Or is this real? And I think it's real.
I think it's real.
But I think it's both. I think
a little bit. Yep.
You know what I mean?
He was asked about that at Big Ten Media Days, if you remember. Someone asked him, you know, why are you such a good public speaker? And he kind of shrugged a lot of it off, the compliments, but he was like, yeah, I mean, I go into things with something that I want to say, something that I communicate, I think about it. He's like, you know, I even maybe rehearse it once if I have to,
yeah,
and then I go out and say it. And I think we've seen that week in and week out at his pressers. You know, he's clearly thought about his speeches, yeah, leading up to the games that we've seen released. Like, that's just, yeah, his MO. He has an idea. He you know, he's a coaching disciple, reading on John Wooden and,
sure,
and however many other people, and that just kind of flows out in those moments.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. All this will sound much better if they beat Northwestern. And granted, they should. They're an 11.5. They're an 11-point favorite. This game doesn't sit well with me, though. I think it could be tighter than fans want it to be. I think fans envision, yeah, they might win, but they're going to go up 14-3 early, and it's going to be fine, and they're going to hold them at bay, and I just don't know if that's going to happen. I think it's going to be a tighter game and a more frustrating game than people anticipate. Not because of anything Nebraska is. I think Northwestern is going to play with nothing to lose. They have nothing to lose.
So more from an intangible standpoint than a football standpoint.
Yeah, I don't think they have anything to lose, and I think they're going to come in and try to do some screwy stuff with the run defense. They've had a week to prepare, and I think they're probably going to be like, you know, we're going to go in here, and we're going to do some stuff, and we are not worried about them throwing the ball on us. We are going to dare them to throw the ball, and so we are going to do some stuff against the run that basically says, throw it. And I'm not sure that Nebraska can. That's the concern.
If they succeed early in making this ugly and 0-0, or maybe even Northwestern would be ahead at the half, do we see Jeff Sims?
I don't think so. Do you think?
I don't know. I don't know Rule well enough to know what he would do.
That would surprise me.
I just don't think, and this is not trying to knock Jeff, who I think has been a model teammate, according to his teammates. Just don't know that he's a better passer than Henrik Harburg.
Well, I'm just saying the offense can't do anything.
Yeah.
First half.
That would be that's a great question. I wouldn't be against it, but I wonder what Rule would do. I don't know.
I mean, I think it goes to like, okay, the big picture with we don't want to, you know, we'll stay with Harburg.
Yep.
Over, they have to win this game to win a bowl game, problem. And this is one you better get.
Yep.
And same with next week. If they don't sweep the next two, then it could get dicey.
It could.
But right now, people are assuming that this is going to happen. Hey, this series is too upside down and crazy.
Yep.
But that was with Coach Fitz.
Who liked to beat Nebraska?
I don't know what that'll be the same.
Well, and this is a spot where Nebraska has not done well in a long time. Like that spot where just what you said, they need to win this one. This is an important game. It's winnable. Because, you know, this is really the first time that's been the case for Nebraska. The Minnesota-Nebraska game was like, who knows what this team's going to be. Colorado was a toss-up when it happened. You had your non-conference games that don't really factor into that too much. But, like, this is that moment where, like, you got to you've built up a little equity,
mm-hmm,
and now what happens?
Great point.
And Matt Rhule said it last week, too. Like, you don't want to be a team that gets embarrassed, fights back, wins, gets apathetic or content, falls back again. They haven't won three in a row since 2016. So, like, build a little momentum. Can they handle success? Like, that's something we still don't know about this team. That's going to be really interesting.
That's a great point. What I'll say is that, you know, I've asked some questions about the offensive line this week in advance of a story that I'm not going to write this week. I'm going to wait. I want to see how it looks on Saturday. Because Saturday is a day where if your offensive and defensive lines are what you think they are, they win, Nebraska wins by 10, and you go into next week, and it's just a different story. But I want to see it. And there's just this part of me that's like, I want to see Nebraska's offensive line. Nebraska averaged 200 yards a game on the ground. Northwestern gives up 172 yards a game. They're the worst run defense in the Big Ten. And there's just this part of me that wonders if Nebraska's going to do what they should do on Saturday. And the offensive line is the key, because you don't have a receiver. Let's not pretend that you have great receivers. You don't. They're hurt. Your quarterback is not Caleb Williams or Michael Penix. Let's be honest about that, too. Harburg may be great one day, but he's not a sixth-year senior. This is a day when you hand the ball off to your backs and you run the hell out of the ball. But your line has to play like this.
Yep, I agree.
So if they are who they want to be, then they will do this game, and they'll play it the right way, and we'll see. Now the week after, when they play Purdue, fancy Purdue, and doing all the things that Purdue wants to do, it's different. Against Purdue, is going to run a hard man defense. You can run that pitch option, and maybe it gets out, and you get an 80-yarder. Northwestern is a bend-but-don't-break defense. They are going to sit in the middle of the field, and they are going to dare Nebraska to go 18 plays, and I don't know if Nebraska can do it. Because when you got to do that, you got to convert three or four third downs. At third and four, third and six, third and eight. Will Nebraska do it? I don't know. So that's what I kind of see coming into this game. I'm picking Nebraska to win, but I just – and this fan base at this point is scarred. What game do we see at Michigan? They just went home.
They did.
Screw this. And they were rustling after it was 14-0. They're done. Like, they're just like, I'm not doing this anymore. And we probably all know people – in our lives that are like, I'm done. We turned it off. We're just going to go do something else. We're going out to Vallis.
Yep. Pumpkin patch.
I had somebody tell me that we went to Vallis. That's just what we did, because we couldn't do it anymore against Michigan. So that fan base, they're great, but they're not putting up with it anymore. They'll just go. I mean, they will get mad.
They're only human.
They're human.
Yeah.
But for a long time, they were superhuman. Like when Scott Frost, they were like, it doesn't matter. We love him, you know. Like,
because
we're gonna.
Him. It was because of him, and then they realized he wasn't
right.
It was somebody else. Hey, who? This guy looks like, he looks more like Chip Kelly than Scott Frost. So
Rule's got an uphill challenge there, because the fans. It's not that it's personal against Rule; they're just tired of seeing it. So Nebraska's got to come out and play well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But we haven't talked about the Nebraska defense, and that's what.
Yeah, they're badass.
It's their show, so they.
They're great.
You know. If they control this game, Nebraska eventually will keep knocking on the door, and I got a couple of touchdowns, and that hopefully that'll be enough.
How much money are they going to have to pay Tony White after the season?
Whatever.
They're going to have to double his salary.
What's he at now? 900.
900.
900. Yeah.
No, I think he's a million.
Maybe
he's
right a million. At, right yep. at a million.
If Satterfield's 1.3 million.
If they go to a bowl.
Yeah.
If they'll go to a bowl. I mean, what's he done? He's done good work, but it's a result.
Fair enough.
You know, it's a results business. So, yeah, he'll be hot one day, but the resume, he needs something on the resume.
Sure.
I mean, what did they get at Syracuse? I mean, you know what I mean. So, he's a guy that if you're in coaching or in football, you know who he is.
Yeah.
You know what he's going to do, but in terms of the money or job offers, I think they need to go do something. But if they do, he'll be part of it. He'll be a big part of it.
Oh, I think they're going to have to pay him. Yeah. I think he's getting a raise.
But I think you pay him. Sure. Yeah.
I like him.
He's a future head coach. The way
he sets a good tone in those press conferences. I think that's the other thing I appreciate about him. Not that Satterfield doesn't. Satterfield has the harder job of the two. I'm just telling you. Not that White's not doing a great job, because he is. But I think Satterfield much more works for Matt Rhule. And some of what's going on in those games is like, hey, we're running the ball. I mean, Satterfield ran the same play like four or five times in a row at Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically like a cross buck. You know, tight end comes across, kicks a guy out. Grant comes inside of it. They ran it like four times in a row.
Well, what Rhule said Monday made me think or made me wonder, okay, you know, he's a Marcus wants to throw deep every play, or wants to throw it every play. Well, I'm going, well, okay, if you weren't in charge of this, you let him do everything he wanted to do, what would that look like? Trying to throw.
It'd look like Mark Whipple.
With this team, they can't throw. They can't throw a catch. So what would that look like? It would go 1-2-3 punt. 1-2-3 punt. Mm-hmm. Loss, loss, loss.
And he said it in his presser yesterday, too. He's like, yeah, I want to. On 3rd and 11, he's like, deep down, yeah, I want to throw it. But sometimes you got to realize run it into the middle of the line, burn some clock.
You play to your strength.
Punt it.
They don't have the players for the passing game. They just don't. I mean, I love Fedoni, but you got to have more than that. So we'll see what these receivers can do, and you know that to me is if anything looks different in the second half, the key to unlocking that will be those kids. So they start making plays. So, but we'll see. But you got to play your strength, and they don't have a lot of strength.
Yes.
Well, what's they the theme? Don't. Theme Ben has been Nebraska wants to be a developmental program. Well, this is when that happens. Well, when your starters are out, and Malachi Coleman's out there, and Jalen Lloyd's out there, and Emmett Johnson's out there. Like, this is when that happens.
Yeah. Right. But what did I see this week? They're going after two JUCO receivers?
Yeah.
Going
after one JUCO returner who's kind of a receiver, right. And the other guy.
I'm just saying, after the season, they could be entered. Everybody is on notice right now, the last six games.
No question.
It's an audition. It's an audition for next year.
The other JUCO receiver.
Quarterback on down. Everybody. Yeah.
So one of them's a returner, and the other one, just we may as well mention this. I'm glad you brought that up. The other junior college receiver that they're recruiting is a former Texas A&M player by the name of Damon Dimas, and he's at Garden City. And he has a legal history. In July of 2023, he pleaded guilty to basically what we would call domestic assault, family assault. It was an assault on his ex-girlfriend. He got probation for that. He also pleaded guilty on the same day to twice violating a protection order against, I think, either that woman or another woman, and that was a felony. And so from what I can gather, he's got 3 years of probation. And he's got 100 hours of community service he's got to do. And Nebraska is the only team that's offered him. And I still haven't been able to catch up to him. I know he did another interview with another news outlet, and he said that the case fell through, and I don't know exactly what that means, because when you plead guilty, even if you get diversion, and probation, 3 years of probation isn't what I would necessarily describe as diversion. 3 years of probation is 3 years of probation. But, you know, it's called a deferred adjudication. So it is diversion, but it's a long diversion. And Nebraska's offered this kid, and I'm just telling you, based on what happened with Gilbert, and that he didn't have legal issues at Georgia, but Nebraska's willing to take that risk on, but it's going to be a story, because I think he's probably going to commit to Nebraska, and that may happen relatively soon, and it's just going to be something that Nebraska's going to have to explain and unpack, and but this is where they're at. They're recruiting a guy that I think they want to give a second chance to, but it's definitely a second chance.
Right.
Now there have been other situations where other people have gotten second chances and so on and so forth. But we'll just have to see. Okay. So let's go on to the picks. Tom's still ahead. He's ahead of Evan by two.
Here
and Evan
come.
Is ahead of me by five. So Tom's ahead of me by seven, Evan by two, and you're both ahead of me. Evan was 6-4 last week, or 7-3, and the two of us were 6-4.
Okay.
And I was stupid to pick USC. What the hell was I thinking? I watched the first, 30 seconds of that game, and I'm like, what the hell did I do? They're going to get their ass kicked. And I even tweeted it out. I'm like, what was I thinking? Anyway, I wasn't. Oregon at Washington State.
Oregon.
Yeah, I'll go Ducks.
Wazoo.
Wow.
I don't like the calls that coach.
Well, he can't catch up to us with if he's
okay.
The same
but I mean, yeah.
Well, I'll just say this: okay. Oregon's players
take chances. Know, the
I think Dan Lanning, you know, probably apologized to his players, but that was disappointing. Some of the calls he made. A lot of Scott Frost and Dan Lanning. Yep. Tennessee at Alabama, third Saturday in October. Tennessee at Alabama.
Alabama. I learned my lesson last week.
Yeah. Same.
Alabama for me too. Minnesota at Iowa. The over-under is 32.
Iowa, that's easy.
Yeah, Iowa.
Sorry, Goldie.
Minnesota.
Aha, I knew it.
We'll see. I think PJ Fleck knows how to coach a football game in the Big Ten. I'm not sure Luke Fickell obviously didn't.
Right.
They threw the ball 50 times to get Sion.
That pig has never been north of the border.
In the West. In the rain and the wind.
How about Wisconsin when was the last time? Yeah. When was the last time they had the pig? It's been a while.
I don't know. That's a great question.
They haven't had the pig in a while.
That's actually a good point.
I always go with Iowa.
Not sure when they've had the pig. I'm not sure that PJ's ever beaten Kirk Ferentz. Duke of Florida State. I'll take Florida State there.
Yeah, I'll go Noles. Ooh, where is that, though?
Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Yep, same.
Rooting for Duke.
By the way, the last time Minnesota beat Iowa, 2014. Yeah.
And it was a rout, right?
51-14.
Yeah.
Wow.
Utah at USC. Great game. Man, contrastive styles. Too good, you know,
It's
good
a revenge
coaching.
Game, but USC right now is just... I'll go USC, but I'm not feeling good about it.
Okay.
I'm going to go Utah.
Evan goes Utah. I go Utah. Caleb Williams looks like he's already ready to go to the NFL, and he's trying to negotiate with teams to see if he can own part of the team. I don't know what's going on there. It's very strange. Wisconsin at Illinois.
Got a little more interesting, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
I almost feel like Illinois, unfortunately... Wisconsin learned its lesson against Iowa and will not go and do that stupid thing again.
But it's not going to have Tanner Mordecai either.
Oh, they weren't afraid to throw the backup. He threw it 30 times!
I know.
What's Wisconsin's quarterback situation?
It's a backup named Braden Locke. And that's it. That's all I can... Yeah, I mean, I watched it. He was 15 of 30. He wasn't the worst quarterback I've ever seen, but he was put in a horrible situation by his coaches. They didn't run the ball.
I'm going to go... Illinois.
Oh, my!
I know. I got to give you guys a chance.
Okay.
All right.
Man. I don't know whether I believe in Illinois after last week or not.
Wisconsin's a three-point favorite, so it's, you know.
At Illinois.
Yeah.
But they look so bad against Iowa. Iowa's defense is really good, though.
It is.
Illinois' defense is not necessarily great. I'll go Wisconsin. And by the way, switch me up. Give me Utah in that other game.
Utah.
I can't. Although they don't have rising back yet either, but still.
They don't.
It's better. Better.
They run the ball. That's the team that I think Nebraska could be one day. Mm-hmm. If they want to be something.
Yeah.
I will go with Illinois as well.
Wow.
Texas at Houston.
Texas.
Okay. That's a...
Are we talking ALCS or college football?
That's a very emotional game. That's very emotional. I think Texas will be pissed off.
Texas. I took Texas as well. Nebraska, Northwestern.
Nebraska.
Yeah, Nebraska.
Nebraska. Penn State at Ohio State. I'm doing it. Penn State.
Ooh. Penn State. I'm going Penn State.
I'll go Buckeyes.
Okay.
How about the volleyball?
It's the last one. Nebraska-Wisconsin volleyball.
I'll go Nebraska.
Me too. Evan.
Wisconsin. I mean, I think it's going to go five. I think it's going to go five. But one team's been there with a bunch of vets.
Yeah,
the other one's on their eyes.
About his picks to the extent that he will pick against. The ladies of
By the way, the winner of the picks thing has to buy the other two lunch.
That sounds good to me.
Done.
Oh, okay.
The winner.
Okay. That's well, I shall lose. Anyway, that's not. But you get to pick the place. The winner gets to pick the place.
Yeah, sure.
How's that?
Hey, the winner buys and picks the place.
I like that.
Done.
That's our picks for this week. That's our Pick 6 podcast for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about Nebraska's game against Northwestern and its upcoming game against Purdue. And, yes, we will be previewing a basketball exhibition. Thanks, everybody.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.